Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, joined once again by Nathan Heinschel and Polly Questel. What is up, boys?
What to do, baby?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not in much of a good mood after yesterday's 3-1 loss, and three teams now in our group on 9 points going into the final week. We still have a pretty sizable goal difference advantage, but going into the last day of the Champions League group stage where anything can happen is
This is
not
the
what you
wait, this is
want.
the second time I've heard someone talk about the goal difference, and I don't know why. It doesn't matter. PSG have the tiebreak on us. Like, goal difference isn't the first tiebreak.
Is it
So
really not?
it's not. It's the first tiebreak is goal difference, is head-to-head goal
It's head to head
difference,
goal.
and then it's total goals head-to-head, and then it's away goals head-to-head. So,
Well, that
which,
really
by the way,
ruins
I think
my.
is what the I think that's what the Premier League should also be doing, but that's neither here nor there. So PSG, by virtue of getting that last
Tottenham
goal,
crushing us
actually,
then.
yeah, but PSG, by virtue of the difference is that would only come into play if we drew with Tottenham. Like, if we drew with Chelsea, then it would, it would matter, whatever happens in the next game that we play Chelsea.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Well,
that
I don't
last
know why you're
goal threw PSG above us in
So
the tiebreak.
glum, Colin. I mean, what happened yesterday only put us in the situation that Polly predicted like a month ago when we lost to Istanbul Basaksehir here.
Right. And,
Or actually,
at
no, that
least
was in the
we've.
lead up to the game. You predicted that. You're like, we need to go ahead and just win this in Istanbul right now, because if we don't, then everyone's going to catch up to us. And sure enough, here we are, all on 9 points.
Yeah,
Vibes
and
are low.
There's a
Istanbul
lot that I
has.
was saying a month ago that people were giving me shit for, and we're sitting in all those boats right now.
You guys need to listen to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer here, guys.
Really do.
Istanbul also has nothing to play for, as they cannot qualify for the Europa League. So if they
Oh, dang, and they're
do
playing PSG.
manage to
That's a
do
bummer.
anything against PSG, it would, they would have to find their own will to do that. But looking at this game, I gotta say the thing that I'm most disappointed about is our missed opportunities yet again. And against Southampton, it didn't matter because we were able to come back in the end. But that was another situation where, those could have proved really costly. And in this game, especially, chances with Anthony Martial missing where it was probably harder to miss than actually score. Cavani in a one-on-one situation, and then Bruno in the first half in a one-on-one situation. And,
Bruno not
you're
even
not.
shooting in that one-on-one
Yes,
situation. I
trying to
mean,
lay it on.
that.
This is these were all, I think Bruno's was in the first half, and then these other two were early in the second half. And if we put these away, 4-1, in a game that we're pretty much in control of at this point as well. I think we're defending pretty well despite the shape not necessarily suiting us. And then, PSG get the advantage and then score on a set piece, which is, another matter. But
But see that you're falling into the trap that everybody's falling into, which is, oh, if we just put our chances away, then we walk away, then we run away with this game. But PSG created some big chances too that they didn't finish, so it goes both ways. Like, if you look at the XG value of these goals, PSG had three that were 0.4, 0.43, and 0.27. That's There's three big chances. They put away the first one, which was Neymar. United, and that adds up to 1.1. So, like, they should have scored one out of those three. United had three big chances. Also, Martial's was only, I think, 0.37. So, a few minutes later, they go down to the other end of the pitch, and Marquinhos misses that header, that actually had a higher XG value than Martial's miss. So, like, let's flip it around and say we go down the pitch and Harry Maguire like misses a header like that, we would never hear the end of it.
But other than that first, I mean, the Neymar goal, I mean, I'm looking at the map and there's the five shots that PSG get that, they're the big circles. They're all after all of our
So
opportunities. They're
they had
after this period where we controlled the game for
yes.
probably half an hour.
But it goes the same way though. Like it's, you know, nothing really happened. It's not like there was the Fred. It's not like the Fred red card came. It's not like the Fred red card came and all of a sudden PSG went on the front foot. It went like we missed the chance, and then just slowly and organically it changed, and PSG suddenly became the better team again, the same way that in the first half PSG were on the front foot for the first 15, 20 minutes, and then slowly, organically, we became the better team. So it does go both ways. I think what really bothers everybody is, like, PSG created three big chances. They scored one goal out of them. United created three big chances. We didn't score at all. Like, our goal came from a deflection and a crappy chance. So it's like, if you were to just score one goal, the three chances added up to an XG of 0.77. Like, that's not unreasonable to round that, to say, like, you should have a goal from that. So in terms of that, once all those chances are said and done, it should have been probably 2-1 United, but 1-1 is fair. And, you know, it's a tale of both sides. Like, if PSG finished their chances, they walk away with this also. Don't get me wrong. It's frustrating. It's frustrating as hell. This team was there for the taking. But I think it's an oversimplification to say, oh, United just hit their chances, because PSG got great chances too. And if they hit them, say, you know, they could be saying the same thing.
Yeah, I guess I think the killer when you look at it from, I guess, that surface face value is just the idea that, it, as Colin said, and as we all realized, it did look like United was controlling the game. And then all of a sudden, you don't put the chances away, and it just kind of opens up the window where I felt like Neymar, who already had a goal early on in the game, I felt like he really started to take control, maybe, what, the 62nd, 63rd minute. I mean, that Marquinhos miss that we first alluded to, that was Neymar who set it up. I mean, he had that clever little chip off to the left, who then it immediately got played right back, and United was completely out of position, and Marquinhos was just sitting there with only De Gea in front of him, and he just missed a sitter. It was kind of a weird fadeaway, but and then Neymar's playing the corner that leads to the goal for Marquinhos, and I just felt like Neymar really started to take control of the game and started, you know, putting his quality in and, you know, doing all his shithousery and things like that as well.
But yeah, I think he got riled up by McTominay after getting roughed up early in the second half, but you know, for the most part.
No, it was very much the other way around. PSG set Neymar out, and this is what Neymar does really. Like, we all bitch at about him because he exaggerates like crazy, but his ability to bring shithousery to the game is not matched by many. He's very, very good at it, and that stretch at the end of the first half with McTominay, he knew exactly what he was doing. You know, McTominay accidentally steps on him, and I believe it was an accident. Neymar makes the most out of it because he's trying to get him sent off, which you should do. And the referee rightly said, like, that wasn't foul play. It was an accident. But McTominay gets annoyed by that. Like, he got into his head right there, because what does McTominay do? He comes right back out. As soon as the ball gets put into play, he comes right back out and fouls Neymar again. So what does Neymar do? The ball gets put into play. He puts his arm out on McTominay. And Neymar, so, like, McTominay is obviously going to grab his arm and wrestle into the ground. It's another foul. But Neymar goes right over to the referee and says, that's three fouls in under a minute. Which the ref goes, yeah, well, you know, how are you not booking him? And the ref says, well, yeah, but you put your arm out, so, you know, you were asking to be fouled. But now it's in the ref's head. So, like, Neymar knows, all right, he's not going to get booked here, but now I've got the ref acknowledging he just fouled me three times in a minute. And the commentator right away said, like, McTominay's got to watch it because Neymar's a very smart player and he's going to get you booked really quickly. And then in the second half, Fred went towards the corner to clear a ball. He cleared it. Neymar came right up behind him and just clipped him very lightly, but, like, enough for a foul, just enough to let you know I'm here. He was winding them both up, and he threw them off their game. And then in the later part of the game, he took over. He was brilliant.
Yeah, and we've seen Neymar before to, like, channel that frustration of, and, you know, kind of shithousery into his form and, you know, his motivation to get things done. And he certainly did today. Or not today, yesterday. Do we have anything else from this game that we really need to discuss? I think I've got some notes about defense, but I mean, we couldn't really go with the same situation that we did last time because Axel Tuanzebe was suspended. So the back four at times looked pretty stretched and we kind of struggled to deal with their speed. But I think for the most part, you know, they were okay. I mean, Alex Telles kind of showing some of his defensive liability, switching off on that first goal. And then the second goal, a set piece problem, something that's kind of a recurring trend for Manchester United.
The second goal was like the luckiest, one of the luckiest things you'll ever see. That Ander Herrera puts his laces through it and he shoots very off target, very low through a massive cluster of bodies that somehow doesn't hit anybody's leg or anything.
It bounces really kindly to Marquinhos.
Yeah, who happens to be in an area where he realizes I can save this ball, and he puts it back in the middle where it again somehow doesn't like hit anybody's legs. It was, you know, like the unfortunate level there. Like, is it poor defending on the second ball? Yes, but again, like you've got guys that are trying to run out to play an offside trap, and the fact that that ball just doesn't hit anybody is bad luck on the initial one.
No.
Well, you asked us if there was one other thing that needs to be addressed for the game, and I guess probably Fred and whether or not he should have been subbed off at half.
Yeah, I mean, the game management narrative around Ollie, I think, is sometimes overblown, but this was definitely a decision where I didn't really see why you would keep him on. Especially if Paul Pogba was back and healthy, given at the time, none of us except Ole Gunnar Solskjaer knew, you know, what level Paul Pogba was at playing wise. And maybe he was still of the mindset that he didn't need to bring on a more creative midfielder and try to keep this defensive shape as it was still working at the time. But keeping Fred on definitely in hindsight was a mistake.
The thing is, can anybody bring you what Fred brings you? Can anybody else do that? And was that paramount to United's plans? And Solskjaer said, you know, we spoke to Fred at halftime, and at the time I was, you know, there is the notion that every coach needs to do this at some point. You got to challenge your player to say, hey, we need you because we don't have anybody else that can do what you do. And we need you out there, but you gotta be smart. And you challenge your player. It's a risk that you take. So you need to do it because you need your player to answer the call and show you that he can or show you that he cannot. You can ask yourself, is this the game to do it? And the answer is yes, maybe no. Maybe it is the game to do it because if you take Fred out and you bring in a Pogba or a Matic, you're not going to get what you need to be able to play the same way and win the game in terms of your strategy. You could answer and say, no, it's PSG. It's way too big of a game. There was too much on the line. You know, the answer, you could be like, you know, oh, we can't go down the 10 men against West Ham. Like, you know, the argument's there for every game. And I will say for the first 20 minutes of the second half, Fred and McTominay came out and they looked like different players. But you're saying with hindsight, I was saying there, if you were to be in my living room with me, I was sitting there being like, he looks like a better player. He's answering the call. I'm still not sure this is the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think our Slack chat was blown up with Fred needs to come off at half. You know, Brent was really, really banging that drum. I was in agreement. I mean, that's the risk reward. You don't have to change up your game plan that, you know, had been working if you keep Fred on. But the risk that you are taking is the particular way that Fred got his yellow card. You run that risk of you've got a referee who's looking to relitigate what should have been probably a red card. So it's
yeah, it was weird because like, all right, Fred gets a ball. He loses control of the ball and extends his leg out to get the ball from, he was the one in possession. And Ander Herrera arrives late and makes the most of it, which we have seen shithousery like that from Ander Herrera countless times. So it's not a yellow card. Like, to me, that's not a yellow card. But Fred had three other instances in the game where he should have been booked, including one which should have been a straight red. So, like, so you can't complain because he should have been off a half hour ago.
And so, kind of going back to the, I guess, the decision making of it is that that kind of, you know, like shithousery and going to ground when you don't really need to, that's not something that Fred usually does. You know, he's generally a pretty careful defensive midfielder and he doesn't often get in trouble. So Solskjaer is probably also thinking that he is aware of the situation and doesn't need to get in more trouble. And that's not really an instance of him getting into trouble, but, you know, he is going to ground kind of unnecessarily there. And
yeah, and look, it's not what cost United the game.
Yeah.
They were 2-1 down at the time. Like when he you know, Fred, I thought, answered the call until the goal. And at that point, that's when you say, hey, 2-1, they're coming after Fred and McTominay and are, you know, probably better to have, you know, let's cut our losses. Like we should have been playing with 10 men for a while now. We've had 10 men. We've had 11 for 65 minutes. We're now 2-1 down. Are Fred and McTominay the pair that are going to get us back into the game? And the answer to that is no. And no planet is it ever yes. So, like, that probably should have been the time where you make a change and say, you know, let's get a little bit more aggressive here. We'll bring on a Pogba. He's going to have, you know, it makes us a little bit more attacking minded, maybe takes a little bit away from our defense, but that's the risk you have to take when you're 2-1 down. And this way you could still play with 11 guys. Like, that's when the change really should have been made. My gut, and I was there, you know, I tweeted it. You can't let him come out for the second half. And like I just said, watching him for the first 20 minutes of the second half, I was still being like, I don't know if this is the right call. But the mistake was actually made right after the goal.
Yeah, I tweeted when Ander Herrera came on. This was through the Busby Babe, you know, logo account. Ander Herrera comes on for Paredes, return appearance to Old Trafford. Get your good thoughts in now before we experience the other side of his shithousery.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what happened. All right. So this weekend we have an opportunity.
Wait, before we jump there, can we just rewind this to the grand scheme of things? Like, I understand.
Sure.
Yeah, I understand that this loss was disappointing and frustrating. Not bad. Like, we lost to PSG. There's a difference between losing to Crystal Palace, Arsenal, Istanbul, and losing to PSG. And, like,
especially when the scoreline does not tell the whole story, I think.
Right, but, you know, like, if no one, you know, when the draw was made, would you have thought, you know, when the draw was made, or if I told you we'd play two very even, you know, the two games were very even, and in terms of the team's performances, I thought it was fair that both teams won one game each. If I would have told you before the, you know, when the draw was made, would you have even expected to win one of those games? I probably would have said we'll probably lose one and get a point in the other. So the fact that we got 3 points is good, but I think it reminds me a lot of the U.S. in the World Cup in 2014. When they lost to Germany, but advanced, and people were celebrating, and people were like, why are we celebrating a loss? This is ridiculous. And it was like, well, you're not celebrating a loss. You're celebrating that we advanced. And people, because at the time there were a lot of people paying attention who didn't really understand the sport, people were trying to put it in a different context. And they're like, imagine if we lost to Germany, drew Portugal, and then beat Ghana. Like, we'd all be celebrating, dancing in the streets right now. And it's like, it's the same thing. You mixed up the order. Imagine if we lost in Paris and won last night. We'd be in the exact same boat right now, but the outlook would be completely different. And in the grand, like, it all comes down to this game. And if we don't go through, it won't be because we didn't beat Leipzig. It won't be because we didn't beat PSG. It'll be because we dropped points to Istanbul. You know, that's, we said this at the time is if, when you're in the group of death, it's the team that loses or drops points to the number four team that doesn't go through. But in the grand scheme of things, if we do go through, then this loss doesn't matter in the slightest. You know, the name of the game is advance to the next round.
That is some vibes analysis if I've ever seen it.
They've also won 4 out of 5. They won 4 out of 5, 3 in a row in the league. Like, if we win this weekend, we won 4 in a row in the league and like 9 straight away games in the league, like, which is our, we already set a record. So
that helps
not,
the XP.
It's not that bad.
Helps yeah, the XP. XP going pretty good right now.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, looking forward to when we play Leipzig. I mean, they're not on the greatest stretch of form since we beat them. Lost to Mönchengladbach, who are currently 7th in the Bundesliga. They were able to beat PSG, who went on to who had a red card in their game. They beat Freiburg, who are currently 14th out of 18. They tied Eintracht Frankfurt, who are 9th, lost to PSG, and then they beat Armenia, who's 17th out of 18 in the Bundesliga. And
they've
then,
had the easiest schedule so far. They
and
are
they got
not
so
that good.
Lucky against Besiktas here yesterday.
They are not that, that good. That they don't goal. Have an attack. They were the first month of the season they were scoring because of, they were getting all their goals from their wingbacks, which is like, that's not going to continue. They've had a ridiculously easy schedule. Like that they've just been beating up on all these teams at the bottom of the Bundesliga. They play Bayern this weekend. They are not that good. Having said that, they can beat United. Like, they are good enough to do that. They are not a team that we could take lightly, etc. But, you know, if we show up and we play at 80% of our capacity, we are the better team. And we should get a result in that game. And don't forget, like, when we play them, Leipzig lack an attack right now. So they haven't been able to replace Timo Werner. And when we played them at Old Trafford, the 5-0 scoreline, 5 flattered us a bit. Nil did not. Leipzig didn't come near our goal. Like, we could have played for an extra hour and they wouldn't have scored. So you just got to go out there and put out another solid defensive performance. You don't concede a goal, you're going to the knockout rounds.
Yeah. And, you know, all these relentless road warriors playing away from home seems to suit us. So, yeah, big match there. And looking ahead to this weekend now, we're playing David Moyes' West Ham on Saturday. And I got to be honest, I don't think I've watched West Ham play this year. I think the last time I watched West Ham play was when they played I think they beat Chelsea near the end of last season, so in late July or something like
that. Not watch them get a draw against us. That was the second to last game of the season.
That's true. I did watch that game. I think I did player ratings for that game. I'll probably get some comments like, oh, so you didn't watch
probably
that
already game. Colin didn't watch the game. And now you're now you're confirming.
I mean, people know this.
I didn't post these player ratings until like 2 hours ago, the PSG ones. To be fair, though, I did have work I had to do after the game yesterday. So, but yeah, this West Ham game. Does anyone have comments on how West Ham play?
Yeah, they play like a David Moyes side. This is because they actually hired David Moyes not to do like a whole immediate rescue, but also to like let David Moyes do what David Moyes can do, which is,
well, they did hire him to do an immediate rescue and then they hired him again to do what David Moyes does,
right? Yeah. When they realized like, oh, maybe we should, maybe David Moyes actually is the right manager for this, which is take a lower mid-table team and overachieve with them. And that's what he's doing. They're very good defensively. This match scares the crap out of me because, like, when was the last time we won away to West Ham?
Yeah, I don't like thinking about playing away to West Ham. And also, they will have 2,000 fans in the stadium. I don't know if that helps them or not, but
yeah, I just over, like, just even thinking of like all the years and everything, like, I just can't. I feel like I can think of a lot more losses at West Ham than I could think of wins. And like the ones that I can think of were like, oh, well, that was the FA Cup.
Well, the worst part is those losses that you're thinking of, those were games when Manchester United should have won. But you look at, in the context of this season, like, West Ham's pretty decent. They've gotten some good results. 4-0 to Wolves, 3-0 against Leicester, got a draw, a 3-3 draw against Tottenham, tied City.
Yeah, they beat Villa last week.
Against Aston Villa. Like, they're solid.
Yeah.
Which I don't appreciate.
They seem to score a lot, so... that changes my outlook for, or that changes who I would play in midfield for this game.
Would you play Nemanja Matic?
Yeah, he's automatic, and I think I'd put Fred in there now. Mm-hmm. I was thinking Fred might play anyway because
play next Tuesday.
Yeah, because he can't play there in the week anyway. So probably slot
and
in.
I do think with the I don't know if they'll play this exact front three again. But the Cavani in the middle and Martial on the left and Rashford on the right has not been bad. There's just been, like, you know, moments where they should have scored and haven't. But, you know, we've had those for the past 7 years.
Well, there's two problems with that front three. One is Cavani's 33 and he can't play week in, week out. Or the problem is it's better than any other front three that we have. And Cavani is 33 and he can't play week in, week out. And you don't want to burn him out now. We spoke about this last week. You know, like he's, or I don't know if we spoke about this, but basically he had 3 goals in his first 5 games. You want that to turn into 6-10, 9-15. You don't want to burn him out and suddenly it's like, hey, 3-5 turned into 5-12. You want to be able to manage his minutes, which I thought he did really well last week by only bringing him on in the second half. I think his plan was not even to play him that much. And he ended up having to play him more than he wanted to. But if you could play Cavani for 45 minutes, get 2 goals and a win, by all means do it. The other problem is Rashford's clearly hurt. So what do you do now? Do you keep running Rashford out there? I mean, kudos to the guy. He wants to keep playing, but remember what happened last year. He overplayed, got way hurt, and everybody blamed out. And they're like, how could you play him when he's hurt? So if you take Rashford out and you take Cavani out, like, what else are you doing? And if you take Rashford out, does that mean you have to play Cavani like every game right now for the foreseeable future until Rashford's fully fit? Like,
I mean, it does seem like
a lot of questions.
It does seem like Greenwood is kind of coming back into the fold a little bit after, you know, some time out of the team, but it's not like
he's
his
not
cameo
performing
appearances
either.
Have, yeah.
I mean, and the problem with Greenwood is like what you saw at Southampton. I mean, he started at Southampton because Martial couldn't play and because he didn't want to start Cavani. And you have the same issue that you have with Greenwood is he doesn't contribute, you know, other than the only chances he creates himself are when he causes a turnover on the press, which he is pretty good at. But he doesn't, you know, everything else is we hope we can create one chance that falls to Greenwood. And if he doesn't bury it, you got a problem. He doesn't contribute to anything else. And in a game where you need 11 players to do that, if the rest of your team isn't good enough to create chances for Greenwood, like to create chances that are going to fall for Greenwood, who is not a player who really gets to the dirty areas of in the box, like look at all of his goals last year. They're all relatively the same, right on the edge of the box or just down that inner right channel where he did some step overs and then put it either on his right foot or his left. It's only the one against Sheffield where he actually got like a striker's number 9 goal where Rashford crossed it in and he threw his body into it. So it's hard to play him when he's not contributing to anything like that.
I just want him to be healthy, man.
it's a hard thing to look at because you also look at how they played against Arsenal. Like United have the advantage here in that they played Arsenal. So they have had a look. They've had the closest thing that you could come to in terms of having a look at this West Ham team because Mikel Arteta is a much more influenced by his time with David Moyes than he has been by his time with Pep Guardiola. And his team, Arsenal, are much more of a David Moyes team than a Manchester City team. So you look at how they played against Arsenal, and it was terrible. It didn't work. So if you want to go to this diamond or split strikers thing, like you're asking for trouble again, because you're going to be up against the same kind of defense.
So yeah, I said,
without getting on a tangent, I know we're not the Short Fuse podcast, but what are we going to hear Mikel Arteta start to take some garbage from the pundits? Because, you know, his team's not really performing particularly well. And, you know, everybody's just looking for an excuse to jump down Ollie's throat. But they go, oh, well, Arteta doesn't have the players, but he's he's a tactical genius from like the Pep Guardiola coaching tree. Like, all right, guys.
Yeah, I mean, what's happening? Right, but like, remember Pep Guardiola, who is influenced by Cruyff and a lot of by Louis van Gaal, and Arteta seems to have not taken the Pep part, but taken the van Gaal part. Like, that is just possession for possession's sake. It is slow. It is awful. Ugh.
And their star striker's not scoring.
Well, their star striker, I mean, he's misusing their star striker, but also, yeah, their 32-year-old striker isn't scoring. Who could have seen that coming? I mean, who could have seen the fact that, like, we were... the media was gushing about Arteta last year, and everybody in the stats community was like, hey guys, this guy isn't really doing anything.
Well, Arteta's like the wet dream for the old school pundits that are on there, you know. He has the right demeanor, kind of has the right look, comes from the right coaching tree.
They just hate Ollie.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't.
I can't really understand why the Arsenal board would let this go on when Mauricio Pochettino, you know, a manager of his quality, is, you know, sitting there available. Why don't they just sack Arteta?
Wait till
Zidane's available in like a month.
If you're Arsenal, you have to. I don't think Mauricio Pochettino would go to Arsenal because he is pretty loyal.
For the same reason why he wouldn't go to Barcelona, right?
Yeah, exactly. But if you're Arsenal, you have to have called him and like, made him say no, right?
You up? WYD.
Like, you have to have called him and at least let him be like, look, I'm not going to do that. If you didn't do that, you're failing at something.
I think that they should hire someone to make North London derbies as interesting as they deserve to be with Jose Mourinho at one of those two clubs.
Pep Guardiola.
It doesn't matter if Jose Mourinho is at that club or not. I could be managing Tottenham. If Mauricio Pochettino is Arsenal's manager, that derby is interesting.
So going back to the Manchester United side of things, this is something I tweeted at Polly this past weekend, and possibly another idea to work in with a potentially Rashfordless front three. Do you think that playing Bruno Fernandes in a front three would, and freeing up, you know, the prospect of playing either Van de Beek or Pogba ahead of the two in midfield, possibly in a bit of a, you know, false nine role or just as a center forward with the two wide forwards around him, do you think that that would continue to enable Bruno to get into the box as he has been doing from the number 10 role in the past few games? Or do you think it would just push him too far up the pitch to get involved?
He'd probably try and Harry Kane it and try and set up play from like just at about midfield. Just drop back that far.
I just answered this. What happens when you play Bruno as a false nine is you end up with split strikers, and United don't have the personnel to do that. You could try it with Cavani and Martial, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's like
to play Cavani, you know, right, three games in a row. Or I guess it would be two games starting.
Yeah, but maybe he's not going to play against Leipzig. I don't know.
Cavani does look like he's relatively comfortable when he has to go out wide to
Cavani is definitely
and he provides that outlet.
Cavani is definitely the guy that we have that whose skill set can play in the front two of the split strikers. Martial is the other one who can kind of do it. It's Rashford and Greenwood. It doesn't fit their skill set at all. So if you do it with Cavani and Martial, maybe, but like you have to make it more of a 4-3-3 like we saw against Southampton in the first half against Southampton. But the thing about that was in the first half against Southampton, Bruno was horrific. I mean, he was so bad in the first half. I tweeted it was a tale of two halves for Bruno. He was back to being Bruno in the second half.
Cavani came on and just was better.
He completed 48% of his passes in the first half, which is bad even by Bruno standards. He completed 72% in the second half, which is bad by everybody's standards. It is exactly what Bruno averages. He gave the ball away more in the second half, but he was back to being Bruno, like, which is why we played a lot better. What ends up happening when you do the false nine thing is he ends up just dropping into mid, like, so deep, and then he's not around. It was interesting last night, if you look at his heat map, he actually was where you want him to be. He was further up the field and everything, which is ironic because usually when you have Fred and McTominay, you need him to drop deeper to help progress the ball. And I think part of the reason why United didn't sustain much of an attack or possession was because Bruno was much higher up the pitch. But ultimately, you know, I'd rather him do that, because if you keep doing that, I think eventually the good things will come and we'll get much more out of Bruno. But I don't know if you want to go into like a diamond false nine thing, because then he drops very deep. When he played as more of like just the number nine in the first half against Southampton, he was terrible. If you put him out on the wing, are you restricting him? It's a tough question. Maybe you leave him out and rest him and bring him on for the last 25, 30 minutes.
There's an idea too.
Yeah, he needs a rest, you know, just like everybody needs a rest.
I think as we've kind of seen in some games this season, not necessarily with Bruno because he's someone who starts pretty much every game, but Ollie, when he does have quality on the bench, has been able to use it pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, well, he used Bruno off the bench fantastically, and you can let Van de Beek start. You just worry right now, because if Bruno, there is a drop, like, not to say that Van de Beek is bad. He's not, but he's not Bruno either. And there is a drop when Bruno's not on the pitch. And right now the team is so heavily built on Bruno because Rashford's not on form, Pogba's not on form, Martial's not on form, that if Bruno's not out there, you wonder where everything is going to come from. So it makes it hard to drop him or even just rest him. But you don't, like, we saw what happened to him in August, July. Like, you don't want to run him into the ground. You need to give him a rest here and there somewhere. And, you know, 60 minutes against West Ham, so he doesn't have to play 90, like, that does help.
Yeah. All right. I think that is going to do it for us today. Do we want to do score predictions? It seems like we're often wrong with these.
1-1.
This match scares the living. We are the better team. We should win. This match scares the living daylights out of us.
We're definitely giving up a corner or like a free kick header to Ogbonna.
Like the other, I just feel like we could be in for like a bad injury early that like throws everything off, because like we're kind of due for an injury. But
Jesus,
knocking on wood. The other thing, I forgot what it was. Sorry.
That's fine. I was trying to think of any players from the David Moyes era of Manchester United that are still in the team that could maybe come on and get a winner.
I got it. I remembered.
Oh, go for it.
Yeah, no. We just set a record for consecutive away wins in the Premier League. And we had already set a record for away wins for United, which we had also set back when Ollie first started.
Which means that the streak is ending.
Yeah, that's the thing, is we don't extend records. We just set them. we break them by a game, and so
or really by nice one or two Premier League and, like, titles.
It would be really nice if we could go and if we want to win four straight Premier League titles, I'll settle for that, and I'll be okay with not winning the fifth, maybe. But yeah, can we extend the record a bit? Yeah. We've won four out of our last five. Let's start another streak again. Let's win four out of the next five.
Yeah. Or 20 out of the next 20.
Okay, but I'm not as demanding as you. Win four out of five, which is a 91-point pace. If we win four out of our next five games and Tottenham play at the same pace they've been playing this season, we will be 4 points off of them with a game in hand. So just win four out of five. Now, everybody will freak out if we win four of our next five. If we win the next four and then lose the fifth, because that'll be Leeds. And then if we do it again, four out of the next four, we'd actually lose in the third round of the FA Cup to Watford. So people would not be happy with that. But grand scheme of things, four out of five. Let's just do that.
All right. I'm going to go listen to Arctic Monkeys now that I've heard four out of five several times in the last minute.
I might go watch some old episodes of X Play.
I don't know what that is. Do you want to explain it for context?
X-Play was the G4 TV games review show. That might have been before your time, Colin. I don't know.
I know what G4 is, but that was my Star Trek TNG marathon channel. I don't know it for any. Oh, Attack of the Show. I know what that is.
Jesus Christ.
Yep. All right. Well, that does it for us. I've been Colin.
I've been Nathan.
Paulie.
Auf Wiedersehen.